All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going deep on contracts.
Always exciting.
Always exciting, that's right. But seriously, we're tackling a pretty important distinction in contract law. You know, like what happens when you change an existing contract?
Like a little tweak versus like a whole new deal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it just a tweak or do you end up with something totally new? We're talking about amendments versus executory accords. And to help us break this down, we're diving into a classic case, Bradshaw v. Birmingham, from way back in 1983. It went all the way up to the Utah Supreme Court.
A real landmark case. Great choice for untangling this whole amendment versus accord thing.
Right. I think it'll really help illustrate the difference. And for all you law students out there, this stuff comes up everywhere. You'll see it in drafting, advising clients on how to handle disputes, even figuring out what happens with settlement agreements. It's foundational.
Absolutely foundational. So what we're really going to be exploring is this. Let's say you've got parties, they made a contract, and then for whatever reason, they decide to switch things up, maybe compromise on something.
Like life threw them a curveball.
Exactly, like a curveball. So the big question is, does that compromise create a whole new binding agreement that just wipes out the old one? Or is it just like a temporary fix, way to resolve the original issues? And if it doesn't work out, can they go back to the original terms?
Okay, I'm following. So to really get a handle on this, let's look at what happened in Bradshaw v. Birmingham. So we've got Bradshaw, he's running B&B Drilling Company, and he agrees to drill a water well for Birmingham. They laid all out in a contract, price per foot, drilling speed, what happens if there are extra costs, you know, the usual.
Setting the stage, getting everyone on the same page.
Exactly. But of course, there's a twist. Right in the middle of drilling that first well, boom. They hit something.
Something they couldn't get past.
An irremovable steel object. Like stuck. Done. No way to finish the well as planned.
Oh, man. A real nightmare scenario.
Yeah, it was a mess. Bradshaw's put in time and money, but Birmingham's got no well. So they start talking, trying to figure out a way forward, and they come up with this separate written agreement. We'll call it the compromise agreement. This is where it gets interesting.
That compromise, that's the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
So tell me, what were the key parts of this agreement? What did they agree on?
Okay, so they basically had a two-part plan. Part one, Birmingham agreed to pay Bradshaw $6,300 for the work on that first, failed well. Makes sense, right? Acknowledge that something was done, even though it didn't work out.
Trying to be fair.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then part two, they set the terms for drilling a second well. They called it a test well. This time, they agreed on a lower price per foot.
Ah, so trying to make it more palatable after the first fiasco.
Yeah. But there was a catch. The lower price only kicked in if the test well actually produced water. Had to be a successful well.
A performance-based discount, I guess you could call it.
Exactly. So they drilled the second well, and guess what? It worked. Water. Success.
Sounds like problem solved.
Well, not so fast. Because then, even though they had a whole new problem, they couldn't agree on the payment, Bradshaw and Birmingham started fighting over how much was actually owed, taking into account both the original contract and, of course, this new compromise agreement.
Classic. So what did Bradshaw do? How did he try to enforce what he thought he was owed?
He went legal. Bradshaw filed a mechanics lien against Birmingham's property. You know, it's like a claim contractors can use to make sure they get paid for work they've done. Basically, you can't sell the property until you settle up.
Ah, putting the pressure on.
Right. So they go to trial, and the trial court sides with Bradshaw. They give him a judgment, the money he was asking for, plus a foreclosure order on that mechanics lien. Big win for Bradshaw.
Ouch. So what was the trial court's rationale? Why did they rule for Bradshaw?
Well, here's the key. The trial court said that the compromise agreement didn't just exist alongside the original contract. They found that the compromise actually amended the original contract. It changed the original deal.
Okay, so that's significant. It wasn't just a side agreement. It actually altered the original terms.
Exactly. And because of that amendment, the trial court said Birmingham was obligated to pay those specific amounts outlined in the updated contract.
Got it. So I'm guessing this is where Birmingham decided, nope. Not accepting that.
You got it. Birmingham was not happy. They decided to appeal the trial court's decision. So they take it up to the Utah Supreme Court, and their big argument was, hey, that compromise agreement, that was an accord and satisfaction, not an amendment.
Okay, time for a legal definition. What exactly does accord and satisfaction mean in this context?
It's a bit technical, but basically Birmingham was saying, look, the compromise was just a temporary thing. It was an accord where Bradshaw agreed to accept a different performance to satisfy the original debt, but it wasn't the final word.
So not a done deal.
Yeah, and Birmingham claimed that if Bradshaw was going to sue, he should have sued based on the original contract because, according to Birmingham, Bradshaw didn't fully hold up his end of the compromise, the satisfaction part. So they were trying to say, hey, since Bradshaw didn't do what he was supposed to under the compromise, we can just go back to the original contract.
Basically hitting the reset button. Clever strategy.
Right. So now the Utah Supreme Court has a big question to answer. What was this compromise agreement, really? An amendment, like the trial court said, or an accord in satisfaction, like Birmingham argued?
Yeah, that's the crux of it. And this is where understanding those legal definitions becomes really important. So let's dive into those.
All right, let's break it down. First up, executory accord, which is what Birmingham was claiming the compromise was. Can you unpack that for us?
Sure. So an executory accord is basically a promise to accept a different performance in the future to settle an existing obligation.
So like, I owe you money, but if I do this other thing instead, we're square.
Yeah, exactly. And the key here is that the original obligation doesn't just disappear. It's still there, hanging out in the background, waiting to see if this new promise, this accord, actually happens. And if that new performance, that accord, doesn't happen, then the original obligation is still enforceable. It's kind of like a wait-and-see agreement.
Interesting. Okay, so how is that different from a substitute contract, which is what the trial court went with?
A big difference. A substitute contract, or an amendment, as it's often called, is a whole new agreement that replaces the old one completely, the original contract. Gone, vanished, out of the picture. The new agreement becomes the only thing that matters.
So it's not a temporary fix, it's a total replacement.
Yeah, like trading in your old car for a brand new model. The old car is gone, you're driving a different vehicle now.
Got it. Okay, so that's the distinction the Utah Supreme Court had to grapple with. Was this compromise agreement a temporary pause button, that executory accord, or was it a hard reset, a substitute contract, completely replacing the original?
Exactly. And this is where things get really interesting, because the court has to figure out what the parties intended, what was in their minds when they made that compromise.
All right, drum roll, please. What did the Utah Supreme Court decide?
They sided with the trial court. They said, yep, this compromise agreement was a binding amendment. It modified the original contract, and it wasn't just an executory accord.
Wow. Okay. So a big win for Bradshaw. What was their reasoning? What made them come to that conclusion?
Their main reason, and this is so crucial for anyone drafting contracts, was the language used in the compromise agreement. There's this one phrase that really stood out to the court. It said, and I'm quoting here, old whole contract being still effective except for changes mentioned herein.
Okay, that's pretty clear.
Right, to the court, that was a huge signal. They said that phrase showed the parties wanted to keep the original contract in place, but just make a few specific changes. If they had wanted a completely new temporary agreement, they wouldn't have talked about the original contract still being effective.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like they were saying the old contract's still the foundation, we're just building on top of it.
Exactly. And that's why being super clear in your contract language is so, so important. You have to choose your words carefully because, as we see here, they can have a huge impact on how a court interprets an agreement.
For sure. Okay, so the language was a big factor, but was there anything else that influenced the court's decision?
Oh, yeah. There was another important point. The court pointed out that the original contract was a bit vague. It didn't clearly explain what would happen if a well failed, like what happened with that first well. And the compromise agreement actually cleared that up. It created a new payment system for the failed well and laid out the terms for drilling the second one.
So they basically filled in the gaps of the original contract.
Precisely. And because of that, the court thought it was more likely that the parties wanted a permanent solution, a binding modification, rather than a temporary fix.
I'm seeing how all the pieces fit together now. So because the court decided this was an amendment, what did that mean for Birmingham and Bradshaw?
Well, it meant that Birmingham had to pay based on the modified contract, the one that included the compromise. And since they hadn't done that, they were in breach of contract, which meant Bradshaw's mechanics lien was valid.
So that one phrase, that one decision from the court made all the difference in who won the case.
Absolutely. It shows you how much power these legal distinctions have.
Okay, so zooming out a bit, what are the big lessons here? What should our listeners, especially those future lawyers, take away from Bradshaw v. Birmingham?
I think one of the biggest takeaways is the importance of intent in contract law. When there's a dispute, courts are going to try to figure out what the parties meant to do, what was their intention when they wrote the contract, when they made the compromise.
So it's not just about what the contract literally says, but also what was going on in their heads.
Right. And this case shows how important it is to make that intention crystal clear in the actual language of the agreement.
So no vague language. Be direct. Be specific.
Exactly. Like, if you want to amend a contract, say, amendment. If you're replacing a section, use words like supersedes. Be clear about whether you want to change the original contract or create a separate conditional agreement.
Otherwise, you could end up in court, like Birmingham, fighting over what the contract really means.
Precisely. And ambiguity can be expensive, not to mention stressful. It's always best to prevent those issues up front with clear drafting.
Absolutely. It's interesting to think about, too, how the parties acted after they made the compromise. Birmingham went ahead and drilled that second well based on what they'd agreed to.
Oh, that's a great point. Actions speak louder than words, right? Even though the focus was on the language of the compromise, Birmingham's actions also showed that they intended to be bound by that new agreement.
It's like they might have been arguing accord and satisfaction in court, but their actions told a different story.
Yeah, really interesting how that plays out. Okay, so last but not least, how does this case tie into the bigger picture of contract law?
Yeah, like, what's the big takeaway for understanding contracts in general?
Well, Bradshaw v. Birmingham reinforces this key principle.
Mm-hmm.
When you modify a contract, those new terms become the rules of the game. They're what matters.
Yeah.
And anything from the old contract that clashes with those new terms is basically thrown out.
So contracts can change, they can adapt, but you've got to make those changes official, clear, and documented.
Exactly. And it's a great example of how dynamic contract law can be. Relationships change, circumstances change, and contracts need to be able to keep up.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So, summing it all up, Bradshaw v. Birmingham teaches us that the way you write a compromise agreement is super important. Those words can determine whether you're changing the original contract or creating a separate agreement. And that can make a huge difference when it comes to enforcing the agreement.
It's all about precision and clarity. Choosing the right words can save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Couldn't agree more. Now, here's something to think about. Imagine if the compromise agreement hadn't said that the old whole contract was still in effect. What if they just laid out the new terms without referencing the original? Do you think the court would have decided the same way?
Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, who knows for sure, but I think it definitely would have made Birmingham's case a lot stronger. They could have argued that the compromise was meant to be a totally new agreement, and since it didn't work out the way they saw it, they should be able to go back to the original contract.
It's almost like that one phrase was the linchpin for the whole case.
Totally. And it just highlights, again, how every word counts.
Yeah, every word, every comma, everything matters when you're drafting a contract. It's like a legal puzzle.
I like that, a legal puzzle.
So for all you listeners out there, keep that in mind. Whether you're dealing with settlements, drafting agreements, whatever it is, think about the Bradshaw case. Think about amendments versus accords. And remember, clear language is your best friend.
Couldn't agree more. Clarity is key in contract law.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
Always a pleasure.
Until then.